one question, and I'm interested in meeting with him when he gets here and have, you know, look at the tape and I'm interested. The Shan state is looking for economic assistance to essentially replace its...
Yes. Hello?
They probably can't hear.
Just the button.
Oh, you need to talk louder. See, you don't have a cheerleader voice.
No, we reject.
Senator, they have no trouble with me.
We have a string and can system. I'm sure that Governor Ernest Greening used the same system 40 years ago.
But they don't have any trouble hearing me, Senator Halper.
The question is, the aid, as I understand it from the tape, is economic aid to replace an economy that's dependent on the production of drugs.
That's correct.
The concern I would have is that it not be in any way become military aid, or become a part of an internal conflict within the country. And I'm not sure how the principalities work within Burma, and just exactly who's on whose side and how it works.
Under the Panlong Agreement of 1947, they were given their independence by the world governments, and they have their own military, and they're capable of securing their own borders. They're not asking for any kind of military assistance. They control an area approximately the size of Texas, and they've been in a battle to protect their borders ever since 1947, and they've been able to do it on their own. Primarily what they need is political assistance and recognition so that they can open their own trade routes. They also need assistance in terms of experts to assist them with crop substitution and also with legitimizing their economy so that they can get outside investment for their natural resources. They have the natural resources to support their own economy. All they need is the political support to be able to be allowed to do that. At this point, because of the suppression in the area, they're not allowed to do that. So to feed their families, they're going to do what they have to do. And in this case, it happens to be raising poppies. Now, the value of the drugs coming out of that area represents 90% of the world heroin. Its street value is something in the neighborhood of $3 trillion per year. They get for their production approximately $150 million a year. So that's the place to stop it. If you want to kill a snake, you bash him in the head, not the tail. In this particular case, these people are willing and capable of shutting off the heroin from that area if we're willing to help them.
All right, Rick, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Ketchikan and Bert Romo. Then Carol Stopey, do you wish to testify? Carol, you didn't sign up. I mean, you didn't check your name, but I know you want to testify. All right, you're next after Mr. Romo and Ketchikan.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, I'm employed in the state program in alcohol drug abuse. I want to hark back for 30 or 40 minutes in this whole proceeding to a gentleman from Wrangell, whose name I missed, but who made some extremely important and relevant comments, I think. He's the man who said he was 21 years ago to contemplate life or whatever. And he's apparently done a good job. I tend to agree with what he said. About the fact that we do not understand the reason for the problem, we do not understand why people do these drugs, and therefore we'll never find the answer until we do understand that. In the meantime, we have before us only the chance for some remedial action or some action to slow down the progress of this thing, we hope. Frankly, I fear for the whole society, and I'm sure a lot of other people do too. Several of us out of the office today had a chance to go through your November 3rd draft, but now the things that we have to comment on about that have been changed, not by your November 3rd, but we went through your April 25th, and tonight I received the November 3rd, which sort of updates it. However, a few comments I will make, and I won't take much of your time. We also have an uneasy feeling about the distinctions of age having to do with penalty, and we see, for instance, a 21-year-old peddling to 18-year-old without coming under the sanctions that you put forward here. reason for an affirmative defense, we hope you're going to work real hard on that so the thing will stand up. And I know that you've moved it to a different location now, but it's the same word. We are a little bit concerned that people who take certain medications under legal prescriptions could be caught up under this law unless it's specified. And we don't, perhaps that is Alaska Statute 17.30, I do not know. We also have some concern about matching the classification of drug with the degree of offense. I think, though I haven't had a chance to really study it, that you changed some of that to a considerable degree in this November 3rd. You might want to tell me that when I'm finished here in a minute. And the one I think important and should be interesting, too, to contemplate, question that I have, really more than a comment, has to do with posting signs and what those signs will say. I'd like to know what experience New Jersey and other states have had with it. Have they posted such a sign? What did it say? What was the effect of it? Is this a good idea? And is the wording good? I don't think we have answers to those. I want to rush into it because there are possibly some very important ramifications. Is 1,000 feet the right distance? Is it too far or not far enough? Aren't drug sales already illegal in the school zone as well as anywhere in the town or the country? What would some of the possible negative results of posting these signs at 1,000 feet from each boundary of a school? Would the pushers of drugs tend to gather there because this is the place to make a tip? I mean, this is the way these people operate. And also, maybe more importantly, does the posting of that sign tend to say, as I think it might, that drugs outside of that area are okay?
No.
That's the end of my comment.
Sir, all the sign says is this, it's on the same, it could be on the same, in New Jersey, they put them on the same sign as the speed limit, the school speed zone areas. It just says this is a drug-free school zone. And that is a signifier that the penalties for selling or possessing drugs within that area are increased. They are increased within that area. And that's the major feature of the bill. And so the sign is an identifier as to the boundary of that zone. And that's all it says. It just identifies that this is a drug-free school zone. It's a sign very similar to schools zoned 20 mile an hour speed limit sign. It's the same looking sign. We have one here tonight. I wish I could show it to you. So we don't mean to say any other message except to identify the parameters of the drug-free zone, where within those parameters the penalties are increased for everyone.
Well, I would just like to say that what the legislature and the legislation intends to say may not be what's interpreted, and that's the only caution I make.
Well stated.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Now we'll go back. Carol Stopey here in Anchorage.
Thank you, Senator Fakes, Senator Halford, Senator Rohde, Senator Jones. I thank you for your interest in this particular topic. I would guess from the amount of interest in this room and in other places around the state that this is a topic of considerable discussion and interest, not only in Anchorage but elsewhere in the state and in the country. I also appreciate the public hearing that you're holding because it provides an opportunity not only to speak on this topic, but also hear the views of others on both sides of the issue. I'm here tonight representing a consortium called Anchorage Fighting Back, which has organized in about the last 6 months. And we represent, the consortium does, the municipality of Anchorage, Department of Health and Human Services, the Anchorage School District, Community Action for Drug-Free Youth, which is a grassroots community-based organization, primarily of parents and other interested community people, and also the Substance Abuse Network, which represents those who provide treatments for substance abusers. We are also fortunate to have the active, visible support of both the mayor of Anchorage and the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. We only learned of this pending legislation, this draft legislation, yesterday, so we've not had an opportunity to take a position in specific. And I'm not here to represent that group or myself in specifics on the legislation. However, we in general support the idea of a drug-free school zone, if for no other reason than to draw an attention to the fact that these are places of importance, the schools are, and this is where our children are, and we are in fact serious about doing what we can to make them drug-free. In that regard, I would say that I'm interested, and I think the consortium would be interested in some background and any research that you could provide in two particular areas. And one of them is funding for enforcement. And that has the obvious interest. The legislation is fine if it passes. If it passes without funding that will provide for the enforcement, that is to say increased police protection so that we can enforce what in fact has become legislation, then it becomes a substantive legislation. And I think that that's something that needs to be addressed by this committee. Also, I would be interested, the consortium would be interested in any research and background on the track record of the courts, prosecution of violators in the current drug laws on use and sale and use of controlled substances. If legislation is passed that says this is a terrific idea that we have drug-free zones, if we don't have the police officers to make sure that they are drug-free zones or to ensure that they are to the greatest extent possible drug-free zones, if we don't have the courts who are interested in prosecution, if they say they're too busy, and they are, as we know, overloaded, then we need to look to a different way. Also, I wanted to bring to your attention for your consideration, and I don't have a view on this, but I think it's important to be aware of it, and that is currently the Anchorage School District, which has what I believe is a strong policy regarding the possession and or use of drugs, including alcohol, and school property, includes off-school sites for school-sponsored activities. Now, it's something that's not addressed in this legislation. I don't know necessarily if it should be addressed in this legislation, but it's something to consider. For example, the one issue that comes to my mind is Ben Boeke, for example, has high school activities, obviously the hockey games. Those are considered school-sponsored activities. We have teachers and counselors and principals that are attendants at those games, and they are considered school-sponsored activities, and the use and or possession or under the influence of drugs during those activities is considered school property in that instance. Our group, as well as I'm sure other groups in the state, but certainly our group, the consortium that I'm representing this evening, will be tracking the legislation. We expect to be very active in supporting what we feel will be the most viable legislation to achieve what we wish to achieve. And those goals, by the way, of our organization, I'll conclude, those goals of our organization, by the way, are to increase community awareness regarding substance abuse with the intent of changing community attitude and subsequent use of controlled substances in this city and obviously statewide.
Carol, we really applaud that you put together that organization of Anchorage Fighting Back. Could we have the names of all those entities and the contact person for each entity for the Judiciary Committee? And I know all legislators would appreciate that information.
You bet.
We particularly would like it.
I will get that to you tomorrow.
All right. Any comments from Carol? Senator Rhodey?
Just a brief comment, since I'm the one that looked at the statute that wrote the law that's being enforced now. The record, in my opinion, of the courts and the police is good in that regard, but I think you hit on the crucial question, and that's enforcement. And my colleagues and Senator heard me talk about it many times, but the laws have absolutely no effect if they're not enforced equally and fairly. And quite frankly, I think that's where we're falling down. And if you ask the district attorney's office or if you ask the state troopers or APD, they'll tell you the same thing. We can interdict 90% of the drugs that come into Alaska with resources. And I'm not talking about...
You're not hearing you, Senator. You're not plugged in.
I keep forgetting to use these. I've never liked them in the beginning.
I agree.
But I think you've hit on a very important point, and I think the school district should continue to make that point to us and to everyone else.
If I could respond briefly to that, and that is, this community, as well as other communities, but in particular the community in which we live here, needs to not only acknowledge the seriousness of substance abuse, but needs to put pressure on those of us that are in policy-making positions to make changes. And one of the ways that we can make change is, as you just said, to be insisting on, supportive of, passing legislation that requires, that expects prosecution of these, enforcement prosecution of these kinds of... until we do that, until we look like we're really, truly serious about this issue, we are really not going to have an impact. And this kind of legislation that you're promoting now is certainly a strong step, but if, without the funding, without the enforcement, without the courts, we're just saying, isn't it a good idea?
The public should insist we enforce the laws we have.
We're working on it.
Carol, thank you very much. Thanks. Officer Strombaugh?
My name's Earl Stambaugh. I'm the captain of the Patrol Division, Anchorage Police Department, previous commander of the Anchorage Metropolitan Drug Unit. We are supportive of this legislation and other legislation to include a conspiracy law and an asset seizure law. We'd also like to see mandatory sentencing on this type of legislation. As an example, in the Washington, D.C. area, one of the federal statutes there is an automatic add-on of 3 years to anyone caught selling any drugs within 1,000 feet of a school. The New Jersey law is a very good one. I've studied that, and I think it is workable here. I think we should do all we can to get those types of legislations passed. If you have any questions about any of these items?
Just a brief comment.
Senator, as long as you push your button.
I noticed you smiled when you mentioned the Conspiracy Act, because I've sponsored that in the Senate, and I hope that the Attorney General's office will hear your comments as well, because, of course, we've been told that they do not believe a Conspiracy Act will do them any material good. I disagree with them as an attorney, because it is, in my opinion, the only way that those people who distribute drugs at the highest level will ever be apprehended.
That's the
I just commend you and ask you to continue telling people about it.
If the law is written in the proper fashion, it certainly is workable and very workable.
Yeah, Captain, I want you to know this bill is a 5-year presumptive sentence.
Okay.
5 years is tougher than the D.C. bill, and it's modeled after the New Jersey bill, which has been on the books for 3 years and has had high success and has passed the court muster so far in New Jersey. So the states are following the New Jersey model as a general rule, and that's what this one does.
That's an excellent model.
Senator Halford, and your microphone. Oh.
I hope that's not a 5-year presumptive in order to get a complete college degree out of the correction system and adequate training in vocational and other things the way our correctional system works. So 5 years presumptive in Alaska may not be equivalent to 2 years presumptive somewhere else.
Elizabeth Jeffson. Captain, thank you very much. And then after Elizabeth, we'll have Charles McGee, and then after Charles, we'll go to Fairbanks. Samuel, if you're still in Fairbanks, we'd like to have your testimony in just a few minutes, sir, so if you'll come to the mic and get ready. Elizabeth, welcome. Good to have you tonight.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to deal a little bit on the school area itself and how you address the children that are affected, and that's what we're really trying to address. Well, I have two little boys, 4 and 5. They're just entering school, but I hear over and over again that there are so many, like the students that were here, they are screaming for help. They want some way to fight back. And as adults, if we can't fight back and listen to their problems, the kids are smoking dope on the bus. I don't want to go to school. I don't want my child to have to go to school under those circumstances. This is at least an attempt to get that kind of thing stopped. We need to address how we're going to penalize even the children that are involved in this. You talk about a 3-year difference in age. What about the kid that's selling drugs to his friend who bought it from somebody else? How are we addressing that situation? Somebody in junior high who's selling it, an eighth grader, is selling it to a seventh grader. That's a problem that I don't see in specifically addressed. Okay, they go to probation, but it's still our children that are being affected. And I am curious if you would explain the 3 years difference to me in age and why you're setting that as a standard.
That is current law. We just copied it from the current law that's on the books now to try to get that line between an adult and a minor in schools. Because we've had so much comment on that tonight, I think the bill drafter is here with us tonight, and he came in from Juneau to be with us, and I'm going to ask him to look at that and see where that came from, what the history of it is, and what we're trying to correct there, and maybe we can strengthen it somewhere along the line. We can't do it tonight, but we've had so many comments about it. I think we'll look at that, but we didn't. We just copied. I mean, it's current law.
Mm-hmm.
So we amended the section in another part. What the standard legislative drafting is to include current law and then show your changes so that you have a big picture. But everybody seems to be focusing on that, so we better look at what. Go ahead and use your mic. Jack Chenoweth is the lawyer who drafted this legislation for us.
Put it up to lock.
Yes.
Briefly, it comes from the federal model that was in existence at the time the Alaska law was recodified in the early 80s. And essentially what it tried to do, or at least what the federal government says their approach tried to do, was to not make as stringent as the penalty for transactions between two people who are roughly of equal age. The idea that the person that you want to get at is the person who deals with people substantially younger, substantially older, substantially different in age than the dealer. But between two high school kids, two college kids of roughly the same age, the presumption was that, hey, maybe it isn't quite a delivery, a sale, a money-making thing. Let's go a little bit easier. That's why it's there. It's been in the law for 6-7 years, and I don't know whether it does what it was put there to do. You'd have to check with the prosecutor.
Well, thank you for that answer.
You raise a really good point, and others have raised it tonight, so we'll do the research and see if it has made a difference or if it's just there and it's not doing anything and it's really causing more problems than it's correcting.
Something else I wanted to address was the catch-22 of when you educate your children about the hazards of drug abuse, it also spawns a curiosity. And what is it that, you know, my children hear the drink and drive thing all the time. You can't drink and drive. What does that mean? And they are not smart enough, at least at this point, to understand the depth of that. But when you educate all about drugs in general, it also spawns a curiosity. Well, what is marijuana like? What is there at a very receptive age? And that is a problem I realize you probably can't address here, but I want people to be at least aware of that. Another question I had is I'm not familiar with the clarifications of all the different controlled substances. Does that also cover alcohol sales in the area?
No. This is the drug code that we have, just dealing with drug substances. It does not cover alcohol.
So a liquor store that's in the 7-Eleven or the in that area does not?
No. A liquor store cannot sell liquor to a minor.
Right.
Okay, so they would be covered under this. Am I not correct? Drugs would be covered, but the alcohol sale, there's already laws on the books to cover
those
alcohol. Right,
but somebody, say, brought it for distributing to a minor in that same area, so the 19-year-old or whatever legally, 21-year-old sells it to someone that's a minor in the same area. Are those laws any stiffer than?
I don't know.
Not under this bill.
This bill doesn't affect that, but I don't know how stiff those penalties are. I know it's illegal, they can't do it, but specifically what the penalties are, I don't have to my fingers.
Well, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. Any comments? Charles McGee,
the
and then...
of the bill might be changed from controlled substance-free zone from drug-free zone.
Okay, I don't know who that is. I have Samuel on next after Mr. McGee. Charles McGee in Anchorage, you are on to testify. Samuel in Fairbanks, you'll be next. Mr. McGee.
Thank you very much. My name is Charles McGee, for the record. And I also want to make known that I would much rather be somewhere else than here tonight. Much rather be. So I don't take pride in doing this, and I've been in many different public meetings. In fact, there's a teacher in town that's giving public workshops on attuning to the natural occurrences in this planet. and I'd much rather be there. First of all, I'd like to quote from a newspaper article, October the 24th, Anchorage Times, quoting Heather Flynn when she said, excerpt out of this article, "The use of power to manipulate amounts to exploitation, and that could also include sole source contracting if it is used to that end. I have some suggestions as to how we can deal with this problem of drug abuse. And the first one is default the nation. Just increase the inflation, which is already occurring. And we're facing, and as of today's newspaper article on page A4, on the close to the bottom, where the government is threatened with default. So what happens with our money when that occurs? Inflation just goes skyrocket, and we won't be able to buy anything, let alone drugs. So that's the first solution. Just allow them to impose socialism, which is what will occur. Or, number two, send our firms to the Treasury and petition the immediate end of this sole source firms or Federal Reserve notes, of course, you know. Or we can first, well, number three, before I get to number three, I'd like to go back to the man that mentioned the Second Amendment rights. First, before we I sympathize with that individual that made that statement. Before we do that, though, we need to impeach not only the elected, but the entrenched public servants that have this attitude of stripping us of our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, as well as IRS, which aren't public servants at all. They belong to the Federal Reserve Corporation. And I must admit that I kind of confused is this free drug zone. I know that addiction is anything that drugs or anything that's addicting is kind of like a drug. So money in itself becomes addicting to us all. And it's also an illegal substance. I go down here on this front page and it says in number three, engages in any continued criminal enterprise. Well, this corporation that I'm talking about is illegal. And I'd like to bring out, make the public aware of this statement. This man said, "Permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes the laws." And it was Mr. Rothschild who made that statement. And so, I also want to point out to you that October 21, Anchorage Times, Saturday, the state won't feel federal cuts. Yet they're set there and they're almost blackmailing us to impose stiffer penalties on us here because we don't enact this law against marijuana. They want to cut student loans and dairy price supports, but yet leave intact military contracts, veteran pension payments, and insurance. And just the other day, I pointed out that $3 to $4 billion was found to be missing from a high-risk insurance company, and this company was high-risk insurance for all 50 states. It's quite amazing how we've allowed this to continue as long as it has, and I include all social public servants in federal, state, as far as impeachment, federal, state, local, and even police force. If they don't want to maintain the republic as it was at the beginning of this nation, then they should just leave the public service program.
Charles, I'll ask you to summarize, please, if you could, sir.
Yes. Wednesday, October 25th, Anchorage Times. Alan Greenspan said that, you know, with Congress wanting to impose more regulations to supervise Federal Reserve, he said all those changes would compromise the political independence of the Fed, which he said was essential to the central bank's main role fighting inflation. And I don't know whether I should laugh or cry with that statement. I am my comment.
Charles, thank you very much. Samuel from Fairbanks, are you ready to testify? And then Marie Majeski from Juneau, are you online ready to testify after Samuel?
Yeah, this is Sam Demento, Fairbanks. First of all, I'd like to say that I think the bill should be introduced to recriminalize marijuana, number one. I think we're sending, on your proposed bill here, I think we're sending two messages to our kids today morning with the existing law. It's okay to smoke pot, and, but then we're, then, there are good things said about that issue. We have also the President of the United States has declared war on drugs and other states of marijuana. I think that those are things that we should consider in this bill and that maybe we'll be criminalizing marijuana. Alaska should recognize drugs as immediate dangerous killers when they're abused in our state. Now, some of my suggestions for your committee, Senator Brooks, is to continue funding agencies, enforcement, treatment centers for alcohol and drugs, strictly enforce laws and regulations concerning alcohol and drug abuse. I support this bill that you have and that we have in front of us now, and I once again urge on criminalization of marijuana. You had a comment on some of the testimony of hers. All those people who testify are allowed to live in Alaska, and they don't want the food and wherever else they need. So they're probably going to retire from this as soon and leave Alaska and make all the money that they've accumulated from the government funds and other jobs that they have within the state of the federal government to ruin the state. So again, I say you criminalize marijuana in leaving the blood. I also see the age section caught my attention, and as soon as I read that, it gave me the connotation that it's taking the strength out of the bill, and I wish you would take a look at it again and put something in there that's going to add more strength to the bill. Those are my comments.
Samuel, thank you very much. Next we have Marie, are you in Juneau ready to testify?
Yes, I am.
You may testify, Marie. Thank you very much.
Okay. I intended to be at the conference this evening, and Juneau is locked in, so we couldn't get out. So here I am on the telephone.
Marie, we've got lots of people, so please identify yourself and give us your testimony. I don't mean to hurry you, but we've got lots of people waiting.
Okay. My name is Marie Majeski, and I'm a state chair for the initiative to recriminalize marijuana. And I'm in general, we just gave the Lieutenant Governor 40,950 signatures so that we can put the recriminalization on the ballot in 1990. I feel that I have not had an opportunity to read your bill thoroughly, but I have perused it, and I think it's an excellent idea. In the work that I have done with the petition, I witnessed about 2,500 signatures personally, and I need to tell you that the people in this state are really seriously concerned about our young people. They are very, very anxious and willing to do whatever is necessary to give them a drug-free environment. I don't know what else I can say except that I am really happy that we are finally working seriously on doing something with the drug problem.
Thank you, Marie, very much.
Okay.
Eleanor Moss? Did I say that right?
That's fine. Yes.
Very good. Please come testify, Eleanor. You've been here a long time. I know you have.
That's okay. I was going to stay a little longer if it was necessary. I'd like to first point out I'm a 30-year resident of Alaska. I lived here more than half of my life. I have a family of five children. My oldest boy was killed in a motorcycle accident, and I still do not know to this day whether he was affected by use of marijuana. That was the only thing he took occasionally, not because he got a hold of it close to a school, but because 13 miles away from the school grounds, he got a hold of some friends, bad friends. And even though I have now two wonderful children that are seniors in high school, but at the same time, it has affected me personally, it has affected my family. I know what it can do. And I'd like to make a few points here. I know that I have a limited time, and I do not want to take away from anybody else that wants to say their piece. I'm very much in favor of the recriminalization of marijuana. I think that maybe even the school clause is not enough, but it's a good point, a good start in the right direction. I heard so much about how education is going to solve all our problems. When I raised five children, I found out that educating them alone...
Do you have your speaker on? I'm sorry. Eleanor, there you go. Okay, thank you.
When I raised my five children, I found out that educating them enough, educating them or trying to educate them was not enough. You tell a child not to touch a match that is on fire, and he will still try to touch it. And the only way he's going to find out that it hurts is if you let him come close enough to it, so it does hurt. So I know that education alone is not going to bring the point across. I know that some of our weaker citizens need to be protected, and especially innocent victims that are driving on the highway. I don't want to encounter someone that needed to get that lift before he got home that night. I don't want to encounter, it's bad enough, we have drunks on the road. I don't want to have marijuana, potheads on the road driving cars also, in addition to that. We heard that lessons need to be learned the hard way, but I like to say one thing, the dead driver learned his lesson too late. The drowned baby, because his parents were in the living room relaxing with a joint, he learned his lesson too late, and so did the parents. And the broken homes are also a lesson that is learned much too late. And as far as being worried about my constitutional rights, I'm not worried about constitutional rights as long as I abide by the law. And the law of this nation still states that a use of marijuana is illegal. So even though the state tells me that it is decriminalized, I'm still not obeying the laws of the country. And I would like to be a good citizen as far as the country is concerned, rather than just the state. I think this is about all I've got here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Esther, come on.
I can't believe I'm doing this. I've never done anything like this before. So
we're friendly, Esther, believe it or not.
Can you hear me?
Make sure you push your button forward, right, and talk right into the microphone.
First of all, I'm a senior in high school, and I do believe that discipline is the answer and that education is the answer. And I know this country and the state has had many compromises in its history, and I feel like this is a time that we must compromise. There are two sides. One says we need education, actually more than two sides, but I'm taking two sides right now. One says we need education, one says we need discipline, stricter laws, stricter punishment. And I think we can compromise those by saying that, just like the lady before me stated, that you can tell a child not to touch a match, but it will, because the match is there, and it will not learn until it's touched the match. I feel that education is not enough, that you can tell a person not to take drugs all you want, but me being a teenager, I know it can be fun. It's fun to take drugs. Who cares if you get hurt? Who cares what it does to your brain cells? Who cares what it does to your friends? It's not reality. Taking drugs at the time is reality, and it's fun. So you do it, because it's in. But it's only fun for a time. And then you start paying the consequences, and your friends start paying the consequences. Marijuana needs to be a criminal act in the state of Alaska. I know too many of my friends who have fallen away because of marijuana and because of other drugs. And I don't want to see it happen to anymore, or to anybody else, or to any of my loved ones.
Esther, let me ask you something. If it was illegal, I mean, it is illegal for teenagers right now. I mean, let's get that straight. But there is a conflict in the law. It's contradictory because there's possession in the home of 4 ounces. If it were clearly recriminalized, absolutely without a doubt, and there were no loopholes anywhere or no ifs, ands, or buts, do you think that would have stopped some of your friends from using drugs and falling away, as you said?
No, not that alone. I feel like, I know if I were them, being sent to McLaughlin would definitely have changed my mind. Just something like that. Even in the early stages of it, especially when they're younger, something like that is really going to change their mind. And as you get older, what I feel is I think you need to ask the teenagers themselves, ask them, what's going to keep you from doing this? You know, and some of them will tell you, some of them won't. But you need to ask them, you know, what's going to keep you from doing this? You know, we have fathers in this country that need to father the children of this country.
Sarah.
And I'm one of them.
Well,
your mic.
It sounded like you were saying that you need obviously law, you need punishment, and you need education.
Right.
And you equated McLaughlin with punishment.
Mm-hmm.
What other things do you think? What do you think about no driver's license? You know, 2-year suspension of a driver's license automatically for anyone of any age, or something that deals with just somebody under 21, driver's license, or. I mean, what are the things that are out there? And remember that incarceration costs a lot of money. So what are the things that we can do that are the strongest deterrents, the strongest punishments, and cost the least amount of money?
Being 17 and just recently receiving my driver's license, I would say that having my driver's license taken away because I have been selling drugs or because I have been using drugs would do something to me. I don't think that if I was heavily involved with it, I think I would eventually block the fact that I have lost my driver's license because of my stupidity out of my mind and continue on the path that I'm going. I think I would continue to do that. And you really want to know what I think. I think there needs to be a change in the heart. It's not going to come from what you do on the outside. It's going to affect it to a certain point. And some people, yes, are more sensitive than others, but it's all got to come in here. Because, you know, what we think is what we do. What we feel is what we do. So it's got to come from the inside first and then go to the outside. And that's up to you guys to decide how to do that, because there's many theories, and I can't tell you which one to believe.
Why not?
Because you wouldn't listen to me. You'd put me in a box with fanatics.
No.
You don't think so?
No, I think you've been probably as logical as anyone 3 times your age. I think you're doing a great job, and I'm kind of curious what you think the answer is.
What I think the answer is, what the answer has been for me is, is Jesus Christ. He has been the answer for me. And he is the only one that could ever have been the answer. I was lost at a young age. I knew I was doing things wrong. I tried to stop, but I couldn't. Mom and Dad would, you know, whip me and, you know, and punish me and educate me. And they disciplined me. But it didn't work. And I was a frustrated child, and now I see my friends, my unsaved friends who are not saved, who do not have Jesus Christ ruling in their life as Lord and as Savior, who are frustrated, and who have these laws binding them and tearing at them and saying, you can't do this, or you get this done to you, and you get this done to you,
And they're frustrated people without any way out. And they're going, why are you trying to take away the only relief that I have from me? This marijuana gives me a peaceful life. Why are you trying to take that away from me? This is my constitutional right. They have no other way. And I feel pity for those people, because I was once one of those people who was a very, very frustrated person inside.
Is Chad still here? And then after Chad, we'll go back to Ketchikan, and I haven't forgotten you, Ketchikan. It's just that we have so many people here in Anchorage to testify. Ralph, Gregory, and Ketchikan, you'll be after Chad. Welcome, Chad. Good to have you here.
Maybe you could announce people's names a couple in advance so they know they're coming up.
I try, Chad.
I'm Chad Frazier. I'm 22 years old. I've lived in Alaska for 15 years. Primarily, I consider that all my life. I don't remember much outside of Alaska. This bill, I didn't see until I got here. I responded to a thing in the newspaper saying about drugs and such. Actually, the bill, I think, just from I've looked it over and listening, actually, I believe the bill is a good idea. The zero tolerance, or the drug-free zones within a school, I mean, a school is for learning, it's for education. There's no, drugs shouldn't be there, there's no need for drugs there. However, the issue of drug legalization, I believe drugs should be legalized. I don't,
doing fine. You can read your remarks too if you'll feel better about it.
Yeah, just I wasn't quite ready.
We all read speeches, so.
It's the big thing is everybody has their opinion. There's opinions. Everybody has their opinion. Drugs are right, drugs are wrong. You know. But we need answers. That's what we're looking for here. It's hard to find answers. Like the gentleman, one of the gentlemen at the beginning said, he learned the question is primary to the answer. I believe that too. But anyway, my idea is for answers. By punishing, with stricter punishment, it's not going to stop the drug user. At least it may stop the less inept, the less understanding drug users, some people can use drugs without any problem to themselves or to others, and some people cannot. It's a very complicated problem. It's not a simple solution. If you push zero tolerance and outrageous punishments on people, it's not on people who really understand the issue. It's only going to serve to outrage them and to cause them to mistrust the government and the lawmakers and such even more. I mean, I've smoked marijuana. I smoke marijuana. I've taken other drugs too. I've tried about everything I could at least once just to try it. One, alcohol is the most debilitating substance I've ever taken. In fact, alcohol is the only substance I've ever taken where I truly felt completely out of control. I mean, nothing else I've taken ever made me feel completely out of control like alcohol did. Marijuana should not be recriminalized. I don't know how you can explain the intuitively obvious. We should make things, if people commit crimes while on drugs, we should erase the I was on drugs, I was out of control defenses, put all responsibility for the actions of drug users on themselves. You have free choice to do drugs, then you have to answer for the consequences of your choices.
If you shoot somebody while you're on drugs, you kill somebody while you're on drugs, you get put in jail for murder. If you can't tell people what to do with their private lives. You can't, as long as they're hurting nobody else. I don't see the point of it.
Chad, I'm going to need you to, to summarize here.
I think we need more education. We need to be truthful. Yes, no drug is physically or physiologically good for you. That's a fact. I mean, it's undeniable. It's not good for you physically or physiologically. Some drugs can help you to a higher understanding of things. In fact, because of the way our government presents drugs, when one does take drugs in the society, often it does come then bring them to a much higher understanding. They suddenly see, well, the government's been feeding me full of a bunch of, you know, it's all lies and it's all misrepresentations. You've got to teach children what drugs are. No, they aren't good for you. But yes, they can be used recreationally by some people. It's got to take laws and such as there are with alcohol now, with all other drugs also, I believe. Not just saying free for all everything's. I mean, if we make them legal, then we have to also regulate them in the same way as we do alcohol and regulate their use and misuse, and the same as, you know, people complain about deaths attributed to drugs and deaths, but there aren't deaths attributed to transactions of alcohol. There are to drugs, but that's because drugs aren't regulated by anybody or anything. They're just, I would appreciate any questions. I think
Chad,
I could probably answer questions better.
Thank you very much. Any comments? Chad, thank you. Michael Callahan, you're in the audience. You will be after Ralph Gregory from Ketchikan. So I'm giving you warning, Michael. You're next. Ralph Gregory.
Thank you, Senator Fakes. I'm Ralph Gregory. I'm the mayor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, and I'm speaking in favor of the bill which would set up a safe zone around schools. The borough school board here recently adopted a resolution in favor of this measure, and the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly has acted to place this measure on the recommended community priority list. So it has been officially adopted by the major governmental entities in this community, and we appreciate your efforts on behalf of drug-free zones around schools. It seems to me that on a broader measure that the concerns that folks have about society, about education, and about the larger viewpoint of where the world is going and so forth are to some extent missing the point. This measure is aimed at separating children from direct exposure to drugs and drug pushers, and it's aimed at separating drug pushers and their drugs from direct exposure to children. While those concerns about making every effort to educate children and overcome the larger problems of society are certainly worthwhile and should be paid attention to, immediately what we are concerned about and what we know can be done to affect the drug problem here in Ketchikan is to make drugs less accessible to the children in this community. We support your efforts and wish you well as you proceed to see this measure through the legislative process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate you staying with us tonight and testifying. Michael Callahan? Ladies and gentlemen, I want everybody to know that it is 9:30. The staff is staying here because there are people here to testify. We're going to make a record if you legislators need to go and do other things. I know it's been a long day. I will supply you with all the testimony of everyone. As long as the staff is willing to stay online, we'll continue to take testimony. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you very much. My first comments have to deal with a little clarity on the issue. I see here a war on drugs in Alaska. What can we do? A little clarity. Now, drugs, a great word. You know, I mean, it works real well. What does it mean when you say drugs? Illegal drugs? Legal drugs? Right.
Do you have your microphone on, sir?
Yeah, I sure do.
Okay, great, sorry.
Now, we can talk about the drugs in the back of the room. Coffee. Sugar. Now, these are drugs. Right? Chocolate. Tobacco. Alcohol. Let's talk about serious drugs, right? Tobacco and alcohol. Now, this is kind of a little knee-jerky thing I see going on here, this war on drugs. Now, what I can do about this war on drugs, now it kind of struck me. I don't like war. I don't think war is appropriate for civilized people. I think peace is appropriate for civilized people. And I think knowledge and understanding is appropriate for civilized people. Now, one of the worst abuses of drugs that you have are legal drugs. Not only alcohol and tobacco, but something that's very seldom mentioned and is rampant in the schools today. Prescription drugs. Wow, man. They're on lithium down there in the schools. They got them on Valium in the schools. That's all right, right? I mean, that's not what we're talking about. We want to classify certain drugs as being illegal, and that's bad. The ones that are legal, they're not bad. When in fact, the only difference between the two is a physician's prescription. That makes it right. Just, you know, we got our priorities a little screwed up here. Now, we moved, traveled around, not this last summer, but summer before, and we went to Amsterdam where, I forget who it was speaking earlier, mentioned Amsterdam. Now, we traveled through there, and I didn't see a third world country. We traveled through probably five or six other countries before we went there, and when we got to Amsterdam, it wasn't like everybody's stoned on the streets hanging out. Drugs are legal in Amsterdam. If you're a heroin addict, you can go and get heroin. In fact, they drive around in rigs and dispense it. If you're registered with them, they give you free heroin. You bring them a needle, they'll give you a clean needle so AIDS doesn't get spread. One really interesting thing I saw there is that all these bicycles have been chained up for years all over the place. And some of them were all overgrown. Now, people weren't ripping these bicycles off and selling them because they needed drugs. Now, this to me is a logical approach to the solution. It's not an ignorant approach. It's not good, bad. It's not us, them. Now, one of the things that I find is that when you talk about drugs, you are talking about an abstract thing. If you're going to have a war on drugs, what are you going to do, shoot a bale of marijuana? You know, you're going to blow up a pound of cocaine? No, you're not. In fact, what you are at war with is humans. And because you abstract this, it makes it socially acceptable. We can say we have a war on drugs, when in fact what you're doing is you're busting humans. Now, okay, we were all in high school together, right? You know, all of us have been in high school. Now, a lot of us anyway, drank when we were in high school. Illegally, I'm sure. Where'd we get those drugs from? From our friends, right? Now, what do we want to do? Let's put ourselves back in that. Do we want to go bust our friends? We want our friends busted? Is this appropriate? Do we want to destroy somebody's life? Or do we want to teach them consciously and responsibly that they're responsible for their own behavior? Whatever they do, if they choose to take drugs, fine. If they choose not to, but they've got to be conscious of their behavior. Now, I was reading a little thing to my kids. We do some homeschooling, so it's not a big issue for us. In 1753, there was an invasion of mice in this small village, and the mice were eating all the crop. So the city fathers got together and passed a law that the mice could not come out of the woods and attack their crop.
Think it stopped the mice? No. Mice kept coming. You guys can go ahead and pass this law. You think it's going to stop the drugs in the school? No, the effect it is going to have, I understand it's very good intentions, and I've heard from the people that have spoken here, and their intentions are very good to protect the children. And I think that's a good thing to do. But indeed, what you're going to do is you're going to bust people, and you're going to put them in jail, and you're going to make a tremendous expense. We have a problem in Fairview with drugs. Okay, I'll wrap it up. Okay? We have a problem in Fairview with drugs. We had a crack house down on the corner of our street. And they told us, prosecuting attorney and the Drug Enforcement Office and the Municipality of Anchorage said, we won't bust unless there's 5 grams in the place. Okay? Now, this is what we're dealing with. You can pass the law. There isn't going to be the money out there. And thank goodness there isn't the money out there to pass all the laws. Here's how I would like to sum it up, though. The right to privacy. This is our Bill of Rights. I think both of you guys were there when this was passed, too. I think you might have been there, Jan. I'm not sure. The right of the people to privacy is recognized and shall not be infringed. The entire section, this is a comment on a constitutional guide, the entire section was added to the Constitution by amendment in 1972. It recognizes a right to privacy that is implied in constitutional guarantees. Freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, due process, for example, but which the courts have never formally recognized as a freestanding right. What the new right means is not clear yet. It may be years before the state Supreme Court fully delineates the range of citizen activity that is protected from government interference.
Summary.
Pardon?
Summarize.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Don't interfere.
Thank you very much. Ms. Carolyn, Drivet, am I saying your name right? Thank you, Senator Rody, very much, and I'll make sure you get all this testimony. I appreciate you being here. Carolyn, are you still here? Okay, John Cowdery. Then after John, we'll have Steve Elliott and Ketchikan, and then we'll finish up with Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'm a 38-year resident. I'm here to speak on behalf of myself, my grandchildren, my relatives and their children, who all attend schools here in Anchorage. I thought this bill addressed the sellers. I just got a copy of the bill tonight, so some people was getting into the users. But anyway, it's my thoughts that it addressed the sellers. Common sense says that Alaska must come down hard on drug pushers who prey on our children. A recent United States Department of Education booklet entitled Schools Without Drugs describes the escalation of drugs use among our American children. I think the U.S., it states the U.S. has the highest rate of teenage drug use in any nation. The drug problem is 10 times greater in this country than it is in Japan. A recent study of teenagers contacting a cocaine hotline revealed that 57% of them brought most of their drugs near or at school. We cannot expect the schools to do the job without the help of parents, legislators, the courts, and concerned community people. Drugs will be beaten only when all of us work together to deliver a tough and firm message to those vicious predators who supply and sell illegal drugs to our children. The message that selling drugs in or near schools will not be tolerated. I support this type of legislation, and I hope that this accomplishes what the goals are. Thank you.
John, thank you very much. Any comments for Mr. Cowdery? Thank you, John, for staying. Steve Elliott, you're next. And after Mr. Elliott in Ketchikan, we'll have Ron Smith here in Anchorage. Mr. Elliott in Ketchikan.
Hi, my name is Steve Elliott. I'm in Ketchikan. I was born here. I have a paper in front of me. And it's a comment from former Secretary of State George Shultz. He says, we need to at least consider and examine forms of control. Examine forms of controlled legalization of drugs. And I kind of chemotherapy and glaucoma victim. Most of what I wanted to say has already been said, though I can testify to what I have personally seen as to where your drug money goes in this drug war. And what I'm about to say, I allege. A policewoman came to my home out of uniform and tricked her way inside my home. Then other officers came in and they went straight to the cocaine that the informant had planted in my home to get her husband out of jail. I was falsely arrested in jail, and he was released from jail. What my informants tell me is that he has both good cocaine and cheap ever since he's got out of jail, and has the best heroin my informant has ever smoked. Well, I forced the police to pull him over in his stolen truck, and he paid a $20 fine. And I feel that informants don't get arrested. There was a real warrant for my house, but it was thrown out of court due to lack of probable cause because of lies and perjury and misleading statements. When they came in the house, they didn't have a warrant, so I guess the real one was lost. An hour after the search, I was shown a warrant that was different than the real one. I feel it was a forged warrant with the court judge's signature on it. There's not much I can do about this. I've gone everywhere for help, and there just doesn't seem to be a law or a government agency to cover this kind of thing. And I'm glad that I wasn't taken out and shot before I had my chance to present my case in court. Thank you for your time.
Steve, appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. After we have Ron Smith testify in Anchorage, I apologize to Frank Smith and the Matt Sue. Frank, I must have misplaced the paper because I know staff probably gave it to me. So you'll be after Mr. Smith. So Frank Smith and Matt Sue will testify after Ron Smith in Anchorage. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Is this microphone on?
Push your button forward.
It's forward.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Ron Smith. I'm an Anchorage resident. We're here this evening hoping to begin to find some answers to the problems of drug use and abuse in our community. If any progress is to be made, one essential tool is a yardstick, a variable, which we can accurately measure to determine if our laws and our policies are having a positive or negative effect. Some people feel that one useful yardstick is the number of cases of drug overdose admitted to hospital emergency rooms. I believe this is probably an accurate yardstick. According to an article in the Anchorage Daily News last month, only two countries in the world, by this yardstick, have made any progress in controlling drug abuse, Singapore and Holland notably. I'd like to ask that you, or the governor, or our two newspapers, send some people to these two countries, reputedly the only two countries making any progress, and have a look at what they're doing. Are they decreasing the damage drugs do to their society? The conflicts within our society caused by drug abuse, both legal and illegal, are in fact a war. If we are in fact at war, then let us win. Obviously, our current policies are not leading to a victory in this war. The objective of a war is a victory in which the victor retains his way of life. If we lose our way of life to get the drugs out of our society, we haven't won our war. I think that a victory in this war will have elements both of Singapore and of Holland. I personally would like to see a state referendum with the death penalty for people who give drugs to children. I think that a drug-free school zone is a good idea, but I think that we're approaching an avalanche with a teaspoon.
Ron, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Frank Smith and the Matt Sue. Sheila, you're next.
Thank you, Senator.
And I apologize for missing you, Frank. I feel badly about that.
Boy. My name is Frank Smith. I'm speaking as a private individual. I'm a former drug user. I've been drug-free for 27 years. For the last 18 years, I've been in the field of drug abuse treatment, prevention, education, and research. And I've continuously been working with volunteer programs fighting drug abuse for the last 17. It distresses me to see adults using mind-altering chemicals, but it absolutely breaks my heart to see children using drugs, particularly marijuana, because they don't learn in school, they frequently develop terrible work habits, and they harm their health, as do any smokers, and so forth. On the other hand, not ask for a single dime this session to support drug treatment intervention efforts over and above the governor's inadequate budget submission. Committee members, members of the committee who have been attending this hearing, as is the case with Drew Pierce, who is absent, and Senator Ewan, who is in the audience, not a single one of these voted to modify the economic limitation factor, which could have paid for these preventative efforts. You were willing to let Senator Tim Kelly cost Alaskans $360 per capita per year when he threatened to hold the health legislation hostage unless the House reported out the marijuana criminalization bill. Just as Senator Richardson in Washington is willing to allow the Bush administration to withhold Alaskan highway funds in Washington. Our criminal justice system is growing under the weight of short-sighted legislation. Racists, robbers, even kidnappers and murderers escape effective prosecution because of inadequate funding and sentencing alternatives. We have over 2,000 prisoners already in this state. We need to reword our priorities in a collegial, nonpartisan manner. And current legislation, including your instant bill, Senator Fakes, a prosecutor's nightmare, does not approach this goal. Thank you.
Frank, thank you very much. Sheila.
Is this on?
It's for
President
Smith.
Yes, ma'am.
Sheila, before you begin, please, and excuse me for interrupting you, is there anyone else? I have no one else on my sheets of paper who wish to testify. Your name,
I
sir?
I signed in when I came in, Senator Fink.
What's your name?
Greg Rupert. I was on the last sheet. It should be one name on the sheet.
Sheila, you may proceed, please.
My name is Sheila Ramos. I'm for the drug-free school zone. Unfortunately, it's 10 years too late for me. I raised four teenage boys. I have two that are still drug addicts, 17 and 18. I denied the problem when they were 9 and 10 years old in junior high. Found out that school teachers were selling it to them. Found out that they could get it from other kids in school in junior high in the lunch hour, where parents were giving the kids drugs in their lunch pails. My kids were caught doing drugs in junior high, were kicked out of school. Well, they were kicked out of school. Fortunately, I had to work, being a single parent. When I was at work, everyone came over and dealt drugs out of my home. When the kids got done with their suspension, went back to school, and I'm talking about my 18 and 19-year-old, went back to school, got caught drinking on school grounds. I said, lock them up. They said, no, we can't. The kids are too young. It's your responsibility. Kid got suspended again. One of my boys, my 17-year-old boy, was suspended 30 times in one school year. My 18-year-old son, they realized that he was going to be a potential dropout when he was 9 years old. And I've got all the documents to show it. They knew he was going to be a dropout. They did nothing to it. I think the drug-free school zone is a good start, but there is so much more that need to be done. I mean, I survived for 10 years. Now they're both 18. In fact, the 17-year-old just turned 18 Sunday. For 10 years, I have fought the drug war in Anchorage, going to different places, institutions, counselors, in court, out of court. Presently, I've got one 18-year-old who has always stayed one step in front of the law, who's never got caught. My other son burglarized my home 3 months ago with his drug friends, and I pressed charges against him. There is a war, and I am definitely against addicts and pushers. And this is, I just wanted to come and say today, thank God somebody's out there and is going to do something about it. That's it.
Sheila, I really appreciate you being here. I don't know if you realize it, but I've known you for over 20 years or something, and it really is nice to have you here. And this is a single mother with all these kids who's always worked and is always out there struggling and doing what's best. I don't think you've had any time for yourself in all these years.
Mm-hmm. But they're
really
18
neat to have you here.
Yeah.
It's really more mothers like you, and I don't think we have this problem. I mean, even with your two problems, two did.
Well, you know,
you try to
something about it. As a single parent, I tried to put the kids in drug rehabilitation. I went to North Star, I went to North Care. There is no way anybody can afford these. My son was in there for 20 days. The 20 days he was in there, then found out that Mom cannot hold me here. No one can hold me here. I can walk. I like doing drugs. You don't want me doing drugs, but I want to do drugs. The kid walked after 20 days, and I was stuck with a bill for $20,000. Mm-hmm. And that's when they say education, on what, on whose expense? Mine? I cannot afford, and I don't know what parent can afford education or drug treatment. There's got to be something else. You know, there's got to be something that we all do as parents and family get together and say, you know, there's a druggie next door. You know, and when they said in junior high, publicize the names of the dealers, it's true. Publicize them. If I knew who my kids were dealing drugs from, or even you other parents who were denying the fact that their kids were doing drugs with my kids, you know, make things known. Everybody needs to get together and make it known. Cry out. And not hide it anymore. It's sweep it underneath the carpet and deny it. And that's all I had to say. Greg?
Good evening, Senators. I appreciate being the cleanup batter here. I wasn't prepared to speak on the drug-free zone. When I saw the advertisement in the newspaper, I seen the national war on drugs and what we can do about it. And I thought I'd like to come and comment on that. Since I've been involved in public speaking on Radio Free America and a few other places here in the city, I feel the national war on drugs is pretty much a joke. If we wanted to remedy the drug situation, we could have done it a long time ago. As an ex-military member, I know for a fact that with military technology, our borders would be secure. If we pass the premise that people can bring drugs into this country, then we can also pass the premise that our enemies can smuggle in weapons and whatever other matter they can, especially considering the size of some of these large shipments. With AWACS and backscatter and paved paw, there is no reason why we cannot close down our borders to drugs. There is no reason for us to send troops and our young men into South America. If we were to take that $9 billion that they're talking about for the national war on drugs, we could put it towards $3 billion for education, $3 billion for some type of youth program to get these kids out of the war zone that you might want to call the inner city, put them back into rural areas like the YCC used to do before it was shut down, and educate these children and make them responsible citizens. Along with that extra money, we could be spent positively towards enforcing the laws that we already have. We have an overworked police department. At any one time here in Anchorage, there is only anywhere between 16 and 17 cruisers to cover this whole area. They need 5 cruisers apiece for each of Fairview and Mountain View, and there's no way that that's going to allow and free up cruisers for the other parts of the city. Now, talking about the recriminalization of marijuana here in the in Alaska, first let me state that I'm a nursing student and then I'm an EMT, and I've worked at scraping bodies off the streets in this city and other parts of the country, and in Japan when I was in the military. I know what drugs and alcohol can do. I know they're killers. Heroin and cocaine in this country are a danger to society. But to use that as a premise to make a law that is, first of all, illegal, I mean, it's unconstitutional. No matter what you say, any of the bills that are currently before the House, and even with the ballot initiative, that law is going to be illegal. We're creating a law that we know is illegal, and I don't see how that is really too much too logical of a thing to do. What we need to do is approach the drug problem. We have laws that I feel that will institute some socialistic tendencies here in this country. If you're going to recriminalize, how many people are you going to make criminals? Are you going to then use Rex 84 under the FEMA program and the Emergency Powers Act of the President to create the 15,000 each detention centers at Elmendorf and Eielson that are mentioned in Rex 84? Because if you don't know about Rex 84 and you don't know about the emergency powers of the President of the United States and you don't know about FEMA, then I suggest that our senators in this state educate themselves on it because it is a threat to society. The war on drugs is perpetuated on the people of Alaska as a means to reinstitute laws that are unconstitutional, and that's already been decided in the Supreme Court. when you're also talking about some of the things that people mentioned this evening with McLaughlin Youth Center and putting people into places like that, it's already proven. Ted Koppel did a show on it. There's a lot of data that boot camp type therapy for nonviolent crimes does not work. No matter what you say, it's already been proven in England, and they're a fairly socialist society, that boot camp and detention center type things do not work. And before I close tonight, I would just like you to reconsider that the real problem in this country is not the drugs. The real problem in this country is that we have mothers and we have fathers that, because inflation, spend probably less than 6 hours a day with their children in the evening. We have mothers and fathers that have to work. Some people work two jobs apiece in order to make ends meet and to live in the high inflation that we have. We've destroyed the American family with the economy and the society that we have. We've taken God out of the schools. The girl that was here talking about Jesus Christ, I don't profess to be a very religious person, but I know I was a product of what I call the public fool system. I grew up in a school district where human secularism was first introduced to it, into the school district, and between what I learned in school and how I was indoctrinated, I think that's why I had some of the problems I have, and I know that is why some of the children have the problems they have. We've taken the morality out of one of the most important institutions we have. These children spend 8 hours a day there, 8 hours a day with these teachers. And what are they learning about morality? They're learning nothing. When you take this drug problem, you're talking about a social issue that relates directly back to the schools, directly back to the families. And if you want to do something constructive about it, let's look and see what we can do for the families of the state and what we can do to improve the education, not only on drugs, but literacy and some of the other institutions that we have within the schools. Because if children can't read, they certainly can't read any of the material you print about how bad drugs are, and they're certainly not going to learn. And
Frank,
thank you.
How would you define family? I'm just curious.
Family, unfortunately, has changed. I define a family now as any type of small social group. It could be just a mother. It could be just a father. It could be
related by blood?
No, they could be adopted, foster. My wife grew up in a foster home, but she has that foster home as her family. But, you know, my wife stays at home. She does home daycare. I go to school during the day and I work part-time. But I see the people that we take care of children for, they don't have time for their own children. My wife potty trains three different kids because their parents don't have enough time, because they're worried about going out there, trying to make the money to pay the mortgage on their homes, to pay the two cars that they need to get to their different jobs. And it's an endless rat race, and we're producing a generation that is going to be going towards drugs, that's going to be indoctrinated through the public fool system and through human secularism, and the problems are only going to get worse in this country. And I can't believe that the legislature hasn't seen what's going on. If you're too interested about chasing the almighty dollar, then, well, I can't say much for it. But if you're really interested in doing something for this country and for this state, take a look at what the root cause is. And it's because the kids don't spend any time with their parents and there's no love in the home.
Great. Thank you very much. I want to compliment everybody who testified tonight. No matter what side of the issue you were on, the testimony was very good. I think it was very well thought out. Everybody was model of decorum, and we really appreciate that very much. We'll have another public hearing. You'll have more opportunities. And good night. And the Senate Judiciary Committee is signing off. And I want to thank all the staff on the lines for hanging in there until 10 o'clock tonight. Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. Bye-bye.